in now. What's up, y'all? I am feeling more youthful today than I have in the last day. You know, it gets to the point where I love me. And I'm not talking about, oh, I think I'm this and I think I'm that. I really like me. I remember when my parents told me my name over and over again, right? Geraldine. I kept saying, why in the world? What does that mean, Geraldine, you know? And I just accepted it because that's what my parents laid on me. At the same time, though, as I got older and older, I kept asking questions about the name Geraldine. And when I would look it up, it was spelled differently, and there was no clarity to why it was called. Why I was called Geraldine. Was there someone in the family? We had an Aunt Geraldine who wanted to call me by her name. And I said, oh, no, 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 no. I didn't really know much about it, but I heard a little bit about it. And she really wanted me to be Geraldine. And I said, please, no, I don't know. And when I became a teenager, I really stayed strong on that. Please don't call me Geraldine. It's Geraldine. Just Geraldine, like a Carolyn, but it's Geraldine. And different people spell it differently. And there's a lot in a name, and I love my name. I really do. And Jonathan, it's amazing how many children are being born today. And by the time they get to the age of 3, 4, 5, you know, all of a sudden they'll start, you know, talking about their name. They actually notice it. They notice that they like it, or they notice and like how they pronounce it, that sort of thing. But man, I really like my name. So with that, I just feel like I should be the personality of a person with a name like Geraldine. I have no idea what that personality would be like. But for my personality, I think it fits beautifully. Well, and I know and have friends and even family members that don't like their middle name or don't like their first name, but I do.
I'll ask this. Have you ever heard of or talk to anyone with your name?
Absolutely. You would be surprised at how many women have the name of Geraldine. It was really quite shocking. There was a woman that I knew at a church that I attended when I first landed in Minnesota back in 1978. And she loved my name so much, she named her upcoming birth. If it's a girl, she said, I'm going to name after you. And I didn't even know her that well, but she was a sweetheart. And I couldn't believe it. Sure enough, she had a girl, and her name is Geraldine. And I have heard it, seen it written differently. Some people start with a G-E-R-L-Y-N, Geraldine. And I have a J, and I've met many people that spell it the exact same way as mine.
And I will say this, you are the only person I've ever known with your name. I'm serious.
Really? Well, yeah. I'm not surprised at that. There are so many interesting names out there that I can't even pronounce. There are people from all over the world here in this country, and I am really impressed by their names, and I try my best to really spell it phonetically. Like if I'm emceeing a program, I have to have all the names phonetically written, unless it's Smith, you know, or something like that. If it's an easy name that most people can read easily, then yeah. But there are so many people here with long names and names that I don't understand. And they'll take, what, 4 of the letters, and that's their name. But if you look at the truth of their name, it's like 15 different letters from, you know, people from India and all sorts of places. And so I'm trying to learn how to pronounce those, especially when I'm emceeing. You know, I would always say to the client, please make sure phonetically it's spelled, because that's how I'll know how to pronounce it.
And I think that's courteous. I think that's something that, especially if you're doing some sort of, let's say, a graduation ceremony, the people that have worked hard to walk across that stage, they want their names said correctly. They don't want any sort of misgivings on their name. So I think that's a really smart thing to do and a really empathetic thing to do.
And I think people are, they feel for the person that's trying to pronounce their name if it's difficult. And they have it now where when their graduates going up on the stage, they have their name spelled out phonetically for the person standing there waiting for them so that they know how to pronounce it. And they can even ask real quickly, you know, say your name. I want to make sure I have it. So that's a cool way to do it as well. But man, sometimes it can be very difficult. And some people get very offended by not having their name pronounced correctly. And I get that. But I've been called Jerklin while I was on the stage, on the station, and doing my show.
I think that one might have had a little bit more purpose to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Somebody called in and said, look, Jerklin. I said, really? Really? That's what you got?
Okay. I'll say this. I'm not going to say the exact phrase, but I have been the same way, especially when I was really, really little. And my grandmother used to call me, you know, just a fun name, a fun nickname. Mm-hmm. And I would say to her, and this is, I guess I was 4 or 5 years old. I said, I am not this name. I am Jonathan Lowe.
Do it again.
No, that's it.
Do it again. That's it. Come on. What if I didn't hear it well? What if I didn't hear it well?
Then you need to get subjected.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that. I opened that.
You need to go to the ear doctor.
Okay. It's like that, huh? Okay, Reverend.
You get one. Right. You get one shot.
You went low. You went low, Jonathan.
You get one shot, and that's it.
Terrible. Yeah, well, this whole thing with names, it's a good thing. And I love it that people are putting other names together. They can use like 4 names to take a little piece from each one. It's amazing to me. In other countries, they can have 5 names before they even get to the last name.
Yeah, a lot of Latin American countries.
African countries as well.
Yeah, you get.
And the people don't forget your name. They don't forget. Even though it's very long.
They must have great memories there, because I look at someone with like 6 names. I'm like, whoa, what?
You know, that's a really good point, because the pandemic really caused some brain challenges during the epidemic. And I know it's still around, but nothing like it was in 2020, 2021. But I will say that even after all of that, there were people that had brain fog. So it's just brain fog, you know, you read more, you do more, and it comes back. There are others who have really been adversely affected by COVID when it comes to your memory. And that's really unfortunate. But I do know some people like that, and recently I've talked to them, and they said, you know what, I'm doing great. I'm remembering. I'm figuring it out. And there are ways you can do it, like puzzles or word search and that sort of thing. Those kind of things kind of help. So, yeah, there's that part. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to talk about my name anymore, Jonathan Lowe. And do you like your name, by the way?
I love my name.
Yeah, I love my name, too.
I have never tried to change it, and usually when I introduce myself to people, I've been doing John more lately, but for a lot
John?
Of years. Yeah.
Is that your nickname?
I know some people are not as formal, and I'll tell them Jonathan, and then they say, do you go by Jonathan or John? I say either one. As long as you spell it correctly, I'm fine. So when you misspell it, that I might tweak you a little bit.
Yes, bold man. Look, we're blessed if people can even call our name out.
Yes, this is
right.
True.
That means somebody actually knows who you are.
This is true.
There's that.
I've had many a situation where I'm like, oh my gosh, I know this person. I've seen this person within the last, you know, month or last mm-hmm. couple months, and they're memorable people because I remember seeing them and talking to them, but I cannot remember their name, and I'm horrible at that.
Well, I actually went to a seminary many, many years ago in Arizona. A dear friend of mine, Chris Young, said to me, you should come to this. It's going to be fabulous. And I said to her, I said, man, I really hope that I can find that guy, because I saw it online, right? It was a man who was the second man in the list of people who can remember enough words up to like 250,000 to 500,000. And he was the second smartest. And I took that seminary class, and I am telling you, man, that's a seminary. Oh, my gosh. The seminar class. I could not believe what I learned. Would you like to hear it?
We got time, sure.
We got time. Here we go. So this is what the man said at the very beginning. He said, I'm going to give you 25 words all in one, you know, in order. 25 words. What you have to do is be able to remember them forward and backward. So he did it. He did it 2 or 3 times to make sure that we heard it. And then he said, okay, here are 25 words. Not the same ones he went through. Here are 25 words. go forward and backward. And so we had to write them down. I had 3 out of 25. 3. That was it. And everyone was laughing and saying, oh my God, there were a lot of oohs in the audience because nobody could believe that you just listen to it back and forth and you'll get it. Sure enough, he did it again and again and again. And before I knew it, I got all 25 backwards and forward. And then he said, okay, let's do it again, a whole nother set. And I got it backwards and forward. But the key to that, Jonathan, if you really want to know, the key is that you put every person, say if it was a thing, a person or a thing, right? If it's a person, you put them in a place that you know well. So let's say you had 25 friends come to your birthday party, but you didn't know any of them. They came to the wrong party. And you needed to learn their names just to say thank you for coming, but you're in the wrong day, you're in the wrong place. What you do is you take that person, you look at their face, you look at their skin color, their eye color, how long is their hair. And the hair is hard because people cut their hair or it's long the next time you see it. But still, pay attention to that. And in your head, you think of a place like your couch in your bedroom, right? Or inside the back seat of your car. That's where they're sitting. So every time you think of that name, you think of the person sitting wherever you put them. You can put 250,000 people. You can say, okay, I want to use U.S. Bank Stadium to put all these people in. I got 250,000 people I've memorized. Where do I put them, though? Because you have to say it in the order that you put them in. You'll be shocked at how much you can learn. You'll be shocked at how correct you are. Got it?
I think I do, and I agree with you. I would be shocked if I was able to retain that much information just by putting them in a specific setting.
And it can be several, lots and lots of specific settings.
Right.
But as long as you know about those settings and you know that you put some people or some numbers in that, or that person's name in that, then you don't have any problem with it. I did that for years and years. And if you don't keep practicing, you will lose it. But that, I cannot tell you how that blessed me as a speaker, right? It was everything. You know, you go to these corporate events that I love, and all of a sudden, you see people that you haven't seen for 3 or 4 years. I could recall him, his wife, and their 3 children.
Wow.
And today, I can't do that. Because I stopped doing it.
You got out of practice.
Yes, you must practice. You must practice until you can't forget.
The brain is a muscle just like anything else.
And it can be a monster, too.
Yeah. Now we
Just saying.
Now
we got to take a break.
Yes.
Okay, got to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. I love music. It is a thing that puts a smile on my face every day, every moment. So I hope it does the same for you. That song is called Hold On, Change Is Coming. Look it up. Sounds of Blackness wrote it, recorded it, got it a Grammy for it. So there you go. Everyone, I want to tell you that I'm so excited to be on with you tonight. We know that the 4th of July is coming up. And of course, with me, when it comes to July 4th, the first thing I think about, unfortunately, I wish I could think about more important things, but it's fireworks. Jonathan, do you ever go buy fireworks?
No, I really don't. There's a stand that is in front of one of the
Cub.
I've seen one in the Cubs. Let's see, that one on Larpenter. I used to see that all the time. Mm-hmm. But there's a liquor store. Converted gas station over on Hennepin that has a small fireworks stand in front of it right now for a few days.
Okay. So it's not very big then, huh?
No, it's not a big parking lot.
I bought fireworks last year. Let me tell you something. They are very expensive. And I'm talking about the ones that are simple that are in the state of Minnesota, right? But if you go over to Wisconsin, which I've never done that, I'm the one that goes over to Cub Food too or something place like that. It's amazing, man. It is amazing how much they cost. And they look so good. Some of them are really small. Like at Target, they have fireworks. And I went in and it was like $84 for this little box. And I'm like, what can that little box do for me? I just need to know, what are my grandchildren going to say? Well, you know, because you want to make sure you impress the family, right? At least I do. Is that important to you, Jonathan, to make sure your friends and family are having a great time?
Well, I haven't spent a lot of 4th of July's with, I haven't spent one with family in Lord knows how many years. I'm trying to think of the last time I was home for 4th of July. I think it's been 20 years.
Wow.
With friends, you know.
Uh-oh.
I'm just trying to think back to the last time I really was at a place where you got the self-made fireworks and you didn't go down to, you know, like a gold medal park to watch the fireworks from from the river. It's been a long time for me. I can take or leave the fireworks. I'm fine with it. I do know one year I was going back home, back to my place here, and I think it was a 4th, and I was working here at the station, and I was off shift driving back to Roseville, and coming around the corner back to my place, there were a couple kids in the street that had, I guess they shot off like a bottle rocket.
Oh, wow.
A small
children?
One.
How old?
They had to be 8 to 10, 8 to 12-ish. Okay. A couple of kids, a couple of children. I want to say maybe 9 and 11-ish in that age range.
Okay.
And the firework, as I'm approaching, because you come around a bend on the frontage road, the firework went off, went under my car, and went off.
Oh, no.
Under my
car. Did it damage anything?
I don't believe it ever did. It fortunately, it just kind of popped and nothing was there. But again, I was driving at the time. And so
How close to the gas line, do you know?
I think it exploded under the engine, so it wasn't that bad. It might have, in retrospect, made some damage, but small enough that it wasn't detectable for a while. Mm-hmm. But I drove past those kids, and I swear the look I gave those kids, I was about to get out the car and...
And do what? And do what?
Something that might land me in jail.
Oh, man. Seriously?
I was so mad. I kept driving, but I was so upset. I was so mad at these two. Just like, stop doing this in the middle of the road where people are... It's in the street where people are coming around and coming home to these complexes. Stop doing this.
Yeah, but at the end of that, when you say stop doing this, say something like... You know, you're important. I don't want anything to happen to you guys, so please don't do that.
No.
Okay,
no.
Yeah. See, I
was
knew
gone.
You were saying,
I was
no.
like, I had
okay.
no sympathy, none at all.
Uh-huh. I see that. All right, I'm going to give you a moment because you can have some, no coffee today. Maybe hot chocolate. No, how about just water? We'll get Jonathan some water over at the station. Because he's pretty ticked off right now with that memory, that is for sure. When do we do weather, sir?
We got a break now.
Oh, okay, we're breaking. We'll be back. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much for sticking and staying with us here at WCCO Radio. Now, what are we talking about this half hour? Well, if you like to stroll through one of Minneapolis parks, you may notice graffiti on some of the buildings you walk by. I know I do. But there's an effort to try and keep that vandalism from happening in the first place. The Minneapolis Parks and Recreation Board has employed local artists to help by painting murals on some of the park buildings. Now, we're going to get into the whys and wheres by speaking with Carrie Ann Christensen. She is a senior planner at the Minneapolis Parks and Recreation Board. Hello, Carrie Ann. How are you?
Good evening. Great. Thanks for having us.
I'm so glad to have you join us. Okay, so here's the thing. Graffiti has been the bane of our existence, not just in the great state of Minnesota, but all over America. And even some of the countries I've traveled to, like France, it was amazing to see how much graffiti was on the buildings, on these beautiful, incredible buildings. So here we are talking about, once again, how do we figure out a way to get rid of the graffiti or make sure that people know that it doesn't have to be this way. So tell us why now we are talking about this.
Thank you. Yeah, so we will be having 9 murals go up in our system this summer, and there's been studies done in over the last number of years to prove that adding murals to walls that are frequent targets of vandalism can actually help reduce the amount of vandalism on those walls. So bringing in local artists that the community respects, that other artists that might be actually doing graffiti or vandalism in the parks might respect, can actually diminish or eliminate the chance that graffiti will happen on that given space. So we've identified a number of sites that are frequent targets and have hired 9 artists to help us create beautiful murals on those spaces in line with the studies that have been done.
So then we have another 9 that some people, some, I don't know if it's teenagers, whoever it is, they go after, even the ones that have been cleaned up, even the ones that are beautiful, they still go after them. So why even put more? Why put the 9 more there for others to destroy?
Well, we also are sharing out stories of the park system through the arts and believe that the power of the arts to help tell stories in our park system is really powerful. So the 9 artists are not just putting any sort of random topics on the walls. It's actually meaningful. It's the 9 goals of our park system that we'll be implementing over the next 15 years. So it's promises to the community. And the belief is that not, you know, having the artists add beauty, but also having this content shared out with community. Community helps shape this vision, these 9 goals. We believe that, you know, having all of that ownership in spaces that might be slightly forgotten or neglected will really help, you know, keep them cared for.
Well, I do love the idea of it. I look at Franklin's Square. I think it's called Franklin Steel.
Oh, yeah, great.
Square Park. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. amazing because there's so many beautiful murals near where this is happening. And that's exciting, right? And they take good care of those. However, I did read in the article here that says that the murals, the canvases, as it were, will be sealed with a graffiti prevention seal coat. Those 9
that's
murals
right.
will be sealed. I got so excited when I read that today because I kept saying to myself, oh my gosh, I've told family members and friends, why can't someone create a paint where graffiti can't go on it? You know, or what is it, whatever they're using is not going to work. But this kind of sounds like this. Am I right?
That's right. Exactly right. Yep. So there's a coating that'll go on each of the murals, and it's a clear coating. So you won't actually notice the coating, but it does. If there's any kind of tagging, we can actually go and spray and remove the tag without damaging the mural underneath the coating.
Okay, so I was hoping that if a person put a tag on it, you can't even see it. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be amazing. You should work on that.
Seriously, I just want, if we had that, we don't have to worry about tags. But we would have to put that particular seal on everything, on the cement, on everything, every bridge, everywhere, every church. That's a lot of work. Is it possible?
Yeah. I don't know. Our crews are definitely out all season, you know, helping remove tags and keep the system beautiful on bridges and walls, like you mentioned, some brick, some concrete, some wood, some metal. And they do, I think you also might have seen in the write-up that we spend over $100,000 a year in the Minneapolis Park system removing vandalized, you know, or tags on surfaces right. to keep our buildings and our walls and our park amenities beautiful for the public. And so some of that funding has actually gone toward hiring these artists as a way of bringing in, as we said, you know, as I was saying before, just trying to create more care in these spaces and keep vandals away from them.
Yeah, I love that you're really trying this out, and I hope that it works. But at the same time, I'm wondering, how much money do you get from the state, from the legislators? Do they make sure that this is possible and that we have plenty of money to make this happen?
Minneapolis Park Board is funded from a variety of sources, and actually Minneapolis, you know, taxpayers are a huge part of that. And that's, you know, part of what we're trying to do is really think about how do we use our dollars responsibly and honor all of the investment that our local residents, put into the park system. We also have state bonding. It's been a really strong year for infrastructure, so there is some state funding that comes. And then there's a variety of other sources that come to us through, you know, sometimes through private donations. There's actually a number of neighborhood organizations that have stepped up across the city to help fund the murals. And so a shout out to all those neighborhood organizations. Minneapolis has a very strong neighborhood network that have stepped up to the plate and said, hey, we believe these murals will help keep our parks beautiful. And so they, too, have signed on and helped support it financially.
And many of them really matter. That's the thing I love, is what they're actually drawing these beautiful murals, making it, you know, where you have to stop and look at it, because it talks about, like in the Arcus, fostering equity, strengthening ecological connections, connecting through technology, and stewarding a continuum of nature and recreation. All of those things people put on these buildings, and it can be absolutely beautiful and meaningful, because you got to stop and think about it, right? Lisa, I hope
that's
you
will. Right. That's right. Yeah, thank you for that. We, over the course of 3 years, we worked with the public and staff and elected officials to develop those 9 goals. And so really, this is our way of sharing out back to the community what we're promising to focus on. And all those things you just mentioned are exactly what we're promising to community that we'll focus on as a park agency over the next decade plus. So everything from making sure we're working in smart partnership to strengthening ecological connections to fostering belonging and equity are all really important big drivers for policy, for funding, for initiatives, for programs. And I think this mural project is even an example of fostering belonging and equity, and really strengthening our communications with community, which are all sort of these policy goals as well.
Yeah. And I wonder, though, how do you make the decision on who gets the new mural?
So, yeah, we looked across the system and identified a number of walls with our paint shop, who is out, you know, caring for these spaces every day, every week. And we came up with a list of probably 25 or so walls that are the most frequent targets that are also highly visible spaces. And then we said, okay, which ones do we know are good surfaces for painting murals on? How we want to make sure they're spread across the system. So, and then in some cases we, you know, reached out to organizations, neighborhood organizations, and some of it was driven by support from community. But really, it was the first identification of, hey, what's most in need in the system, and then working our way toward what's visible, where, how do we spread it out across the system. So that's how we identified the 9 walls, and there will, you know, there may be more murals in the future to add to those other walls, which would be great. And then we did have a very competitive call for artists as well. So we selected 9 artists kind of around the same time as winnowing down the walls. And those artists, we had about 150 applicants apply, really incredible nationally and internationally renowned artists, all with local ties to Minneapolis parks or Minneapolis. And we selected 9 in collaboration with a nonprofit arts organization partner, Forecast Public Art. And so that's how we sort of paired artists based on their community ties to those parks, or to things like, we have actually someone that's a healthcare professional. So they're one of the artists, Constanza. So she's paired with the goal of health equity. So really interesting ties too with how the artists show up in community and their expertise.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. Tell me how, when you said to yourself, okay, we're going to do 9, and I know exactly where we need to put them, but there are so many other places that could use it too in those communities. Is there going to be a time when it'll be more than 9 of the murals that are new in that area, or just Minneapolis getting those 9? Will they ever get 18? Will that increase?
I certainly hope so. We hope that, you know, I guess we could think of this as a pilot, and doing 9 will really give us a good sense of the impact. You know, it's a nice way to spread it out, but also, you know, we'll be able to see the impact over the next year. And this is one of the first times we've actually used our operational dollars, so our funding for maintaining parks, to hire artists in this way. So it's a new kind of innovative way of maintaining our parks that we hope is successful, and then we hope to repeat in the future.
Now, I do understand that this is what you're attempting to do, or what you're doing, is curbing vandalism, not eradicating it, you know, not getting
rid
of it. So if that's the case, how do you approach now, once all of these 9 are up and going, how do you make sure, or try to make sure, that those that want to destroy it or put up their sign on it, how do you make sure that's a lot less than it was?
Well, we do ask community to respect those spaces, and, some of these spaces were identified from community calling in and being in good communication with us, so we do rely on community to help us spread the word. and also communicate with us when there's needs for maintenance in the park. So same thing here. Really appreciate being able to share the story tonight of these murals. They are meaningful messages that we believe, you know, we're definitely co-created with community, thousands of voices. And so we're just excited to have them out in the system and hope you'll keep in touch with us, community, that anyone that's listening in tonight, and let us know if you see any issues on those murals or any walls. And we'll do our best to keep our parks beautiful and well cared for.
Where do they call if they need to talk to someone?
Just the park board headquarters. There's a customer service line that I can find for us. We can get, okay. We can publish out.
Okay, that'll be great. And Carrie Ann Christensen, Senior Planner and Recreation Board, which, wow, that's a lot. I know a lot about that. So, wow, well done. I'm so happy to have interviewed you tonight. And I just want to know that I want to let you know that it really matters to me that this is happening. And I just hope that everyone can get on board and understand how important these murals are or can be in their communities. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Take care, Carrie.
All right. Good night.
Good night. All right, everyone. We're going to take a break and we'll be back. Welcome back, everyone, as we wrap. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much for sticking and staying with us here at WCCO Radio. Now, what are we talking about this half hour? Well, if you like to stroll through one of Minneapolis parks, you may notice graffiti on some of the buildings you walk by. I know I do. But there's an effort to try and keep that vandalism from happening in the first place. The Minneapolis Parks and Recreation Board has employed local artists to help by painting murals on some of the park buildings. Now, we're going to get into the whys and wheres by speaking with Carrie Ann Christensen. She is a senior planner at the Minneapolis Parks and Recreation Board. Hello, Carrie Ann. How are you?
Good evening. Great. Thanks for having us.
I'm so glad to have you join us. Okay, so here's the thing. Graffiti has been the bane of our existence, not just in the great state of Minnesota, but all over America. And even some of the countries I've traveled to, like France, it was amazing to see how much graffiti was on the buildings, on these beautiful, incredible buildings. So here we are talking about, once again, how do we figure out a way to get rid of the graffiti or make sure that people know that it doesn't have to be this way. So tell us why now we are talking about this.
Thank you. Yeah, so we will be having 9 murals go up in our system this summer, and there's been studies done in over the last number of years to prove that adding murals to walls that are frequent targets of vandalism can actually help reduce the amount of vandalism on those walls. So bringing in local artists that the community respects, that other artists that might be actually doing graffiti or vandalism in the parks might respect, can actually diminish or eliminate the chance that graffiti will happen on that given space. So we've identified a number of sites that are frequent targets and have hired 9 artists to help us create beautiful murals on those spaces in line with the studies that have been done.
So then we have another 9 that some people, I don't know if it's teenagers, whoever it is, they go after, even the ones that have been cleaned up, even the ones that are beautiful, they still go after them. So why even put more? Why put the 9 more there for others to destroy?
Well, we also are sharing out stories of the park system through the arts and believe that the power of the arts to help tell stories in our park system is really powerful. So the 9 artists are not just putting any sort of random topics on the walls. It's actually meaningful. It's the 9 goals of our park system that we'll be implementing over the next 15 years. So it's promises to the community. And the belief is that not, you know, having the artists add beauty, but also having this content shared out with community helps shape this vision, these 9 goals. We believe that, you know, having all of that ownership in spaces that might be slightly forgotten or neglected will really help, you know, keep them cared for.
Well, I do love the idea of it. I look at Franklin's Square. I think it's called Franklin Steel.
Oh, yeah, great.
Square Park. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. amazing because there's so many beautiful murals near where this is happening. And that's exciting, right? And they take good care of those. However, I did read in the article here that says that the murals, the canvases, as it were, will be sealed with a graffiti prevention seal coat. Those 9
that's
murals
right.
will be sealed. I got so excited when I read that today because I kept saying to myself, oh my gosh, I've told family members and friends, why can't someone create a paint where graffiti can't go on it? You know, or what is it, whatever they're using is not going to work. But this kind of sounds like this. Am I right?
That's right. Exactly right. Yep. So there's a coating that'll go on each of the murals, and it's a clear coating, so you won't actually notice the coating, but it does. If there's any kind of tagging, we can actually go and spray and remove the tag without damaging the mural underneath the coating.
Okay, so I was hoping that if a person put a tag on it, you can't even see it. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be amazing. You should work on that.
Seriously, I just want, if we had that, we don't have to worry about tags. But we would have to put that particular seal on everything. On the cement, on everything, every bridge, everywhere, every church. That's a lot of work. Is it possible?
Yeah. I don't know. Our crews are definitely out all season, you know, helping remove tags and keep the system beautiful on bridges and walls, like you mentioned, some brick, some concrete, some wood, some metal. And they do, I think you also might have seen in the write-up that we spend over $100,000 a year in the Minneapolis Park system removing vandalized, you know, or tags on surfaces to keep our buildings and our walls and our park amenities beautiful for the public. And so some of that funding has actually gone toward hiring these artists as a way of bringing in, as we said, you know, as we were saying before, just trying to create more care in these spaces. And keep vandals away from them.
Yeah, I love that you're really trying this out, and I hope that it works. But at the same time, I'm wondering, how much money do you get from the state, from the legislators? Do they make sure that this is possible and that we have plenty of money to make this happen?
Minneapolis Park Board is funded from a variety of sources, and actually Minneapolis, you know, taxpayers are a huge part of that. And that's, you know, part of what we're trying to do is really think about how do we use our dollars responsibly and honor all of the investment that our local residents, you know, put into the park system. We also have state bonding. It's been a really strong year for infrastructure, so there is some state funding that comes. And then there's a variety of other sources that come to us through, you know, sometimes through private donations. There's actually a number of neighborhood organizations that have stepped up across the city to help fund the murals. And so a shout out to all those neighborhood organizations. Minneapolis has a very strong neighborhood network that have stepped up to the plate and said, hey, we believe these murals will help keep our parks beautiful. And so they, too, have signed on and helped support it financially.
And many of them really matter. That's the thing I love, is what they're actually drawing these beautiful murals, making it, you know, where you have to stop and look at it, because it talks about, like in the arc, fostering equity, strengthening ecological connections, connecting through technology, and stewarding a continuum of nature and recreation. All of those things people put on these buildings, and it can be absolutely beautiful and meaningful, because you got to stop and think about it, right? Lisa, I hope
that's right. That's right. Yeah, thank you for that. We, over the course of 3 years, we worked with the public and staff and elected officials to develop those 9 goals. And so really, this is our way of sharing out back to the community what we're promising to focus on. And all those things you just mentioned are exactly what we're promising to community that we'll focus on as a park agency over the next decade plus. So everything from making sure we're working in smart partnership to strengthening ecological connections to fostering belonging and equity are all really important big drivers for policy, for funding, for initiatives, for programs. And I think this mural project is even an example of fostering belonging and equity and you know, really strengthening our communications with community, which are all sort of these policy goals as well.
Yeah. And I wonder, though, how do you make the decision on who gets the new mural?
So, yeah, we looked across the system and identified a number of walls with our paint shop, who is out, you know, caring for these spaces every day, every week. And we came up with a list of probably 25 or so walls that are the most frequent targets that are also highly visible spaces. And then we said, okay, which ones do we know are good surfaces for painting murals on? which ones, how we want to make sure they're spread across the system. So, and then in some cases, we, you know, reached out to organizations, neighborhood organizations, and some of it was driven by support from community. But really, it was those, that the first identification of, hey, what's most in need in the system, and then working our way toward what's visible, where, how do we spread it out across the system. So that's how we identified the 9 walls, and then, and there will, you know, there may be more murals in the future to add to those other walls, which would be great. And then we did have a very competitive call for artists as well. So we selected 9 artists kind of around the same time as winnowing down the walls. And those artists, we had about 150 applicants apply, really incredible nationally and internationally renowned artists, all with local ties to Minneapolis parks or Minneapolis. And we selected 9 in collaboration with a nonprofit arts organization partner, Forecast Public Art. And so that's how we sort of paired artists based on their community ties to those parks, or to things like, we have actually someone that's a healthcare professional. So they're one of the artists, Constanza. So she's paired with the goal of health equity. So really interesting ties too with how the artists show up in community and their expertise.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. But tell me how, when you said to yourself, okay, we're going to do 9, and I know exactly where we need to put them, but there are so many other places that could use it too in those communities. Is there going to be a time when it'll be more than 9 of the murals that are new in that area, or just Minneapolis getting those 9? Will they ever get 18? Will that increase?
I certainly hope so. We hope that, you know, I guess we could think of this as a pilot, and doing 9 will really give us a good sense of the impact. You know, it's a nice way to spread it out, but also, you know, we'll be able to see the impact over the next year. And this is one of the first times we've actually used our operational dollars, so our funding for maintaining parks, to hire artists in this way. So it's a new kind of innovative way of maintaining our parks that we hope is successful, and then we hope to repeat in the future.
Now, I do understand that this is what you're attempting to do, or what you're doing, is curbing vandalism, not eradicating it, you know, not getting
rid
of it. So if that's the case, how do you approach now? Once all of these 9 are up and going, how do you make sure, or try to make sure, that those that want to destroy it or put up their sign on it, how do you make sure that's a lot less than it was?
Well, that is, I mean, we do ask community to respect those spaces. And, you know, some of these spaces were identified from community calling in and being in good communication with us. So we do rely on community to help us spread the word, and also communicate with us when there's needs for maintenance in the park. So same thing here. Really appreciate being able to share the story tonight of these murals. They are meaningful messages that we believe, you know, we're definitely co-created with community, thousands of voices. And so we're just excited to have them out in the system, and hope you'll keep in touch with us, community, that anyone that's listening in tonight, and let us know if you see any issues on those murals or any walls, and we'll do our best to keep our parks beautiful and well cared for.
Where do they call if they need to talk to someone?
Just the park board headquarters. There's a customer service line that I can find for us. We can get,
okay,
and we can publish out.
Okay, that'll be great. And Carrie Ann Christensen, Senior Planner and Recreation Board, which, wow, that's a lot. I know a lot about that. So, wow, well done. I'm so happy to have interviewed you tonight. And I just want to know, I want to let you know that it really matters to me that this is happening. And I just hope that everyone can get on board and understand how important these murals are or can be in their communities. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Take care, Carrie.
All right. Good night.
Good night. All right, everyone. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back. Welcome back, everyone, as we wrap up this hour. I'm so happy that you are joining us, and I wanted to let you know that John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline is the one that is making this possible for us, and I'm really grateful for that. Also want to let you know who my two producers are. When you hear the voice, that is Jonathan Lowe. He has been the producer, oh my God, I don't know for how many years, 16 about now, Jonathan?
I've been off and on. Now, I wouldn't call myself a producer. I would call myself, I've worked with you. Mm-hmm. For the majority of the 13 years I've been here, but I really have not been a producer of yours until the last year.
Oh, okay. So
yeah.
Now you tell me that.
I try to give due to who books the guests, and you've had a few producers that have helped you over the years. When I came on, Chris Tubbs was already producing portions of the show, and so I kind of took over another portion of the show. So,
but it's really cool for me to have two producers. I prefer to call you that. That's what is named on the program note, producers.
Yes.
Thank you, Chris Tubbs and Jonathan Lowe.
Now I can say that. I can truly say that I am a producer for this show.
Mm-hmm. You happy about that? I hope so. Good God.
One thing I did want to mention. You were talking about the park board and how to reach them, how to contact them.
Yes. Did you get a number or name?
I believe so. So the number you can contact, 612-230-6400. That's the main contact number, 612-230-6400. And they're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
Oh, thank you so much for that information, because you never know. I'm that person that would call, especially about what we just talked about with this graffiti and trying to get rid of it, and also trying to put it up so that it's, you know, it really speaks to us about what they're doing and how important these murals are. It's a deep conversation, but a lot of people don't see it sometimes. They only see the ugliness that people put their tags on, and that's not cool. I just don't know if we'll ever get rid of it. Do you? Do you think we'll ever get rid of it?
I think it's, especially over the last 30, 40 years, it's become a form of art. And I think it's a form of expression. And I don't think that will ever go away.
Yeah. I wonder if there are awards for the best. We'll have to look into that. All right. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with you in just a moment. Welcome back, everyone, as we wrap up this hour. I'm so happy that you are joining us, and I wanted to let you know that John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline is the one that is making this possible for us, and I'm really grateful for that. Also want to let you know who my two producers are. When you hear the voice, that is Jonathan Lowe. He has been the producer, oh my God, I don't know for how many years, 16 about now, Jonathan?
I've been off and on. Now, I wouldn't call myself a producer. I would call myself, I've worked with you. Mm-hmm. For the majority of the 13 years I've been here, but I really have not been a producer of yours until the last year.
Oh, okay. So
yeah.
Now you tell me that.
I try to give due to who books the guests, and you've had a few producers that have helped you over the years. When I came on, Chris Tubbs was already producing portions of the show, kind of took over another portion of the show. So,
but it's really cool for me to have two producers. I prefer to call you that. That's what is named on the program note, producers.
Yes.
Thank you, Chris Tubbs and Jonathan Lowe.
Now I can say that. I can truly say that I am a producer for this show.
Mm-hmm. You happy about that? I hope so. Good God.
One thing I did want to mention. You were talking about the park board and how to reach them, how to contact them.
Yes. Did you get a number or name?
I believe so. So the number you can contact, 612-230-6400. That's the main contact number, 612-230-6400. And they're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
Oh, thank you so much for that information, because you never know. I'm that person that would call, especially about what we just talked about with this graffiti and trying to get rid of it, and also trying to put it up so that it's, you know, it really speaks to us about what they're doing and how important these murals are. It's a deep conversation, but a lot of people don't see it sometimes. They only see the ugliness that people put their tags on, and that's not cool. I just don't know if we'll ever get rid of it. Do you? Do you think we'll ever get rid of it?
I think it's, especially over the last 30, 40 years, it's become a form of art. And I think it's a form of expression. And I don't think that will ever go away.
Yeah. I wonder if there are awards for the best. We'll have to look into that. All right. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with you in just a moment.